What's up, people? I am fired up for this week's edition of the LCFP, week 11. Let's go, man. I woke up this morning and I told my wife, I am so glad I did this year. And I just want to, before we get into this episode, say thank you so much to everybody that has tuned in and that has engaged with the content, that has sent follow-ups with me, that has sent me their opinions on some of the takes and the information we've shared here. I want to also give a huge shout-out to everyone that's joined the show. I hope y'all have loved the other two laners being regulars on the show. Shout-out to my dad and Johnny. We had some great guests earlier this season, later this season. You're going to love today's guest. I'm going to get into that later, but the Howie Man, Howie, joined us on this episode. But we've had Stumpy come on a couple times to talk about uniforms. We've had people send in stuff from games, and we've reported on that. We had Grant Koppel, Alex Sanders. We have had some awesome guests on the show, and it's just been so fun to have different people on. And real quick, before we move on, I just want to pitch y'all. Share this with somebody who would appreciate it, a college football fan, a fanatic. I've also just launched a YouTube page where we're going to be sharing clips from the pod, other content as well. So please, I'll include that in the link in the show notes. But man, if you listen to this, please just take a second, write a review. It helps more people find out about the show, and it helps more people to enjoy just what we are all passionate about, college football, and get to enjoy that. So engage with the YouTube page, subscribe there, subscribe to this if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and please leave us a written review. It's always fun to get to share those things. So thank you to everyone who listens, and let's jump in to today's episode. All right, people, this is a big episode. Last week's slate was phenomenal. Man, dude, week 11's games were awesome. And this late in the year, we're getting to see some good matchups, a lot of playoff implications. We were on the verge of chaos. We really were. Florida State, Miami was close. Washington, Utah was close. Penn State, Michigan was close. And Georgia. Oh, Georgia. Boy, oh boy. Georgia has confirmed what we have been saying on the LCFP all year, that they are the unanimous, dominant, standalone, number one team in the country. They proved it this weekend. And so we'll talk about all these games. It was a huge slate. So much fun. Can we just talk about, man, the state of college football right now? Very competitive. So many good games. Lots of teams vying for position in the CFP. This is an exciting time for college football, people. Let's go. 2 weeks left. Conference championship weekend. And then we have our Final Four of who's going to actually be in the playoffs. So these are exciting times, people. Buckle in. Don't focus on all the negative stuff. Don't listen to the naysayers. We have a lot of exciting college football left, and there could be some chaos. Heather Dinich, shout out to Heather Dinich, wrote an incredible article. We'll link it in the show notes about just some of the chaos that could happen with these playoffs. I mean, there could be some really good teams left out. A team that I think everyone would be afraid to play could be left out of the playoff if some of these undefeated teams stay undefeated. Now we know that Ohio State and Michigan have to square off, so one of those teams will not be undefeated. But even then, we could still see Georgia stay undefeated, Washington stay undefeated, Florida State stay undefeated, and then one of those two teams. So we may literally have four undefeated teams at the end of the year. Now, personally, I hope it doesn't happen. I want to see chaos. I want to see craziness. But there are a lot of outcomes that could happen. We're going to have my good friend Alex Howard, also known as Howie, join the show later on, and you're going to love this interview. He has some crazy takes. He talks about some coaches who have cemented themselves, who are safe, but also with the firing of the first two coaches and a couple other coaching changes and some coaches announcing their retirements at the end of the season. He announces which coaches he thinks might see their seats get a little hot. Some crazy ones in there. I don't agree with all of them. I push back a little bit, but I love the takes from Alex Howard. And I just love that he put some big names out there, some names that we may not always consider. And he agrees with some of our takes that we've had with just some programs that have been disappointing. And so we'll see how all this shapes out. One of the things that we talked about as well was just, man, Ryan Day, the premier coach in the Big Ten right now, with everything that's going on with Michigan, whether you're a Michigan fan or not, man, one of the things I talked about with Howie is that C.J. Stroud has been phenomenal in the NFL so far. And the fact that he went 0-2 against Michigan as a starter at OSU is just kind of mind-blowing to me, especially after how well he performed in the playoff last year against Georgia. That was Georgia's biggest test last year, let's be honest. Their only close game was Ohio State, and that's an Ohio State team that lost to Michigan. Explain that to me. Explain that to me. That same Michigan team lost to TCU, and then TCU got absolutely boat raced by Georgia, and they're 4-6 this year. So explain that to me for all those who are saying, oh, poor Michigan. I'm done with that narrative. I think it's getting a little cringy, always having Desmond Howard on there defending Michigan, talking about these big words like due process and all that. Give me a break. Give me a break. For everyone who wants proof, there's readily available proof that Michigan was cheating. They don't have to share all that information. That's up to the Big Ten. That's up to the NCAA. But, I mean, we've all seen the clips and the videos of Connor Stallions all over the place. And he was a part of their staff. And Jim Harbaugh's got to take responsibility for that. But all these Michigan fans and the Michigan fan base and all the people who are defending them are saying, oh, poor Michigan. At the end of the day, that narrative is irrelevant because they cheated. At the end of the day, you cheat. You don't deserve to be defended. Now, I get it. Innocent until proven guilty. But have y'all not seen those clips? I'm going to link one of them to the show notes. Of Michigan playing against Ohio State last year, and Ohio State's calling late audibles, late in the play clock, and as they're calling these audibles, Michigan is immediately calling, pass, pass, run, run, and making stops on these plays. There is no way that that Michigan defense that allowed 45-plus points to TCU last year could shut down C.J. Stroud in that Ohio State offense. Give me a break. Anyway, I'm not going to just spend the whole time ranting on Michigan. Y'all know how I feel, clearly, but I'm just kind of over it. I think that there's a lot of people in sports media right now that are very professional, and they don't take everything personally with their school. And I love Desmond Howard. I'm not calling him out, but I just would like to see this handled better by him and others in the sports media. I mean, Kirk Herbstreit is obviously an Ohio State guy. He's not always out there taking it personally. When people go after Ohio State, he's even said himself, I don't know that Ohio State is the most complete team this year. I don't know that they should be ranked number one. Greg McElroy, clearly, Alabama guy. He's not out there just every week in, week out, saying, oh, Alabama this, Alabama that. He's not taking it personal. So I just think it's been a little bit unprofessional, and I think that the sports media world deserves the future football players, and even just the future generation of people who love sports and are sports fans better than this, oh, woe is Michigan. Feel bad for Michigan? No, man, we got to take some responsibility. There was clear cheating, and that cheating affected the outcomes of games. So at the end of the day, people got to take responsibility for that. And I think that's an important message for the next generation to hear, that when you do cheat like that and it does impact the outcomes of games, you need to take responsibility for that. And it's okay that they are being punished. As a matter of fact, it's a good thing. You can't cheat like that and go unpunished. So that's my rant on that. Probably not a lot of people that like that. We got a lot of Michigan fans that listen in, and I hate to see it too. I've been to a game in Michigan. I enjoyed myself there. Was a fan of Harbaugh. Obviously not anymore, but we'll see how this all shapes out. All right, other big news from this week. The coaching carousel has begun to spin. Wow, this has been in the talks for a while. Jimbo Fisher. The era at Texas A&M is finally done. My goodness. Hire his agent immediately if you're out there. Boy, oh boy, is that guy getting a payday to not coach. Clearly, his era was nothing better than Kevin Sumlin's era. The only thing that he has to say is that that year they finished just outside of the top four, that COVID year. It looked like that might be the year where they would kind of launch off of that, but instead they regressed, and they actually went below 500 last season. I don't know why they wait another year to fire him, keep him around this year, and then fire him after they blow out Mississippi State. The timing of it, very strange to me, but it just seems like they were like, hey, enough is enough. I don't know why he made it through last year, and then you bring him around this year to have just another mediocre year above 500, but still just kind of more of the same of what the whole Jimbo Fisher era has been. One crazy thing that I've got to point out about this, and shout out to Darren Rovell on X. This was his tweet. Jimbo Fisher's first paid coaching job was in 1991 at Samford University. Go Bulldogs. Shout out to the great people at Samford. And you know what he got paid? $20,000 to be the OC at Samford. First coaching job, first paid gig. And then $26,301. Remember that number, because here's why. That's what Jimbo Fisher will get paid per day over the next 8 years to not coach at Texas A&M. $26,000 plus a day to not coach. Wow. I mean, absolute robbery what Jimbo Fisher did to the good people at Texas A&M. Aggies fans, I'm sorry. It's tough days to be an Aggie fan, but the future's got to be brighter. There's a lot of good coaches out there. At first, I was kind of like, who's out there? But then you kind of remember, man, coaches get poached all the time. And there's a lot of good coaches out there that Texas A&M, they got the big bucks. They're willing to pay and shell out some money. So I think there's a lot of coaches that they'd love to see. And one of the interesting names that came up was Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, to the SEC. That would be crazy. Could you imagine with the SEC expanding next year, Texas and Oklahoma joining, and Deion Sanders gets thrown in the mix? My goodness. Of course, people are bringing up Dan Lanning and Oregon's just having a great year. There's no way I think Dan Lanning would jump ship at this point. Oregon's a playoff contender, could find themselves in there, and could be playing for the chip. So I don't see Dan Lanning leaving unless it's after the season. But even then, I still don't see him leaving. I think he's got a great thing going at Oregon. But of course, we have seen crazier things happen. The other piece that happened here was Zach Arnett has been fired at Mississippi State after only 11 games. So that era came and went very quickly. Of course, he was the defensive coordinator under Mike Leach there. And shout out Mike Leach, RIP. Miss seeing him this year. And it's going to be weird to watch the Egg Bowl without him this year. That's for sure. But Zach Arnett did not even get to be the head coach of the Egg Bowl in his coaching tenure as the head coach at Mississippi State. So that's another job that'll be opened up, and we'll see. And then, of course, San Diego State will be another head coaching opening. And so we'll see. As the carousel now starts to just kind of creak and spin and round the corner, there's a lot more to come. And you're going to hear from Alex Howard about some of the coaches that he says should beware. And take into consideration as well that he doesn't just mean in this cycle, but in years to come, because you'll hear some big names and go, whoa, pump the brakes. But he's also thinking the next few years as well in some of his considerations. So exciting things to come with Alex Howard. All right, folks, we got an incredible guest on the show today. The man, the myth, the legend, Howie, Alex Howard, my good friend from Taylor University, campus legend. If you know Howie, you love Howie. Howie, too, is just a huge sports fan. One of the biggest sports fans I know. And in the realm of college football, is a fan of the Indiana Hoosiers. Howie, thanks for joining the pod.
Laner, dude, thanks for having me. I'm super pumped to be on. Yes, I'm an IU football fan. I don't switch over. I don't go to Notre Dame in the fall like most IU basketball fans. I stay true to my Hoosiers.
Respect, Howie. Respect. I know a lot of people that do that, so I'm sure you get tempted to every year.
They're bad. They're bad.
Well, we'll get to IU football later. We'll get to a little Big Ten update, and we'll talk about some coaches that, as we kind of get to the end of the year here, might be on the hot seat. We've already seen a few coaches go down. Everyone's talking about Jimbo Fisher being gone, but there's a few other coaches that are already kind of on their way out that we will discuss. But first off, I mean, talk about an IU transfer. Michael Penix Jr. could be the Heisman front runner. Washington sitting there on the cusp of the top four. Howie, what do you think of that?
I look at the college football playoff rankings every week and wonder, how is Washington not number four?
Wow.
How do they continue to get left out of that top four spot? I just think their wins look way more impressive than Florida State. Their offense is way more impressive. They're way more consistent. They're way more exciting to watch. And I know the college football committee wants views. They want the whole nation to be involved. So why do we just continue to focus on that eastern part, you know, east side of the Mississippi teams? Get Washington in there. Get get that West Coast excited to watch, a team like Washington represent the West in the college football playoff.
Dude, that's a really good point. Definitely seems like, man, the East half of the country, there's a lot of bias for the sport, and it's going to be interesting moving forward with a lot of those West Coast teams joining the Big Ten, joining the ACC, joining the Big 12, going to get to see a lot more of those matchups throughout the week. Obviously, it has been a really exciting year for the Pac, but I'm with you. If Oregon is supposedly the sixth best team in the country, the best one-loss team in the country, then how come Washington has beat the best one-loss team in the country and stays at number five? Any thoughts there, Howie?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. Like, they beat Oregon in a huge matchup, close three-point game. And then it was kind of a close game against Utah, but really watching it, you felt like Washington had control over that whole game. I mean, they had the fumble recovery, and the dude dropped it at like the 2 yard line.
Yeah, that was crazy. And
then Utah recovered, but then they scored a safety on the next play. Just wild stuff from Washington this week. That game was electric, from start to finish. But I mean, it's just week to week they just dominate. I mean, offensively, Penix throws just an insane amount of passing yards, and it seems like their offense is so vertical, so fun to watch. It just like takes the top off of every defense they play. They don't really have any like crazy stumbles. A little weird game against Arizona State, but other than that, I mean, this Washington team is just consistent.
Mm-hmm. And man, I love the coaching staff out there. And I know you hate to see DeBoer out there, former offensive coordinator, you know, your former quarterback out there. And they were an electric duo. Not a lot of people remember that year. They had Ohio State on the ropes. I mean, they played very quality football that year with him calling plays as OC and with Penix playing at quarterback. And then it just kind of all fell apart. And not a lot of people realize Washington, I believe, has the second longest win streak right now in college football behind Georgia. So they've got a good thing cooking out there, and it's going to be fun to watch them play these next few weeks. You think that they'll be able to go into the Pac-12 championship game unblemished? I know they've got some tough tests ahead, but like you said, that Utah win, that's a quality football team. Utah's a team that is overlooked every year. They've been a consistent program for the past decade or so of just solid team, not going to lose a lot of games, hard to beat them. What do you think? Think they'll be able to get into the playoff?
Yeah, I think Utah has the best defense in the Pac-12. I just think they have the most like Big Ten type of defense, and Penix was still able to throw 300 plus against that, and they were still able to run the ball well. So if they're able to do that against Utah, which is the best defense, I think next week or this week coming up with Oregon State, that's going to be a tough one. On the road, but
and Howie, they got a little ripped off. I think Oregon State. I think Corvallis is like, why didn't game day come in here? I don't know,
right,
if you got your thoughts there. I know they wanted to show some love to JMU, and rightfully so, undefeated. But I think that Corvallis is like, come on, we got Washington coming to town. There's playoff implications. Why don't we have game day here?
Yeah, game day does this every once in a while where they get off the beaten path and they'll go to a game that's like, they went to Jackson State, right?
Yep.
And they, you know, they'll do that. They'll deviate with like a bigger story or a team that's like James Madison that's undefeated. But if you look at it, it's a 7:30 game on ABC. It's got the hype of that primetime game. I don't know. Game day can sometimes be a blessing or a curse for a team.
Yeah, that's true.
In a university, it just kind of, I don't know. Game day is not the end all be all of like, that's what makes it a good atmosphere.
True that.
I think this Oregon State will be rocking on Saturday night.
Yeah, definitely. And man, yeah, that'll be a fun matchup. All right, so let's move now. This is an interesting timing for this episode because we're moving into the part of the year where coaches are getting fired. Where there's, you know, there's rumors, there's murmurs, there's reports. Every game matters. Some coaches are just fighting to get a bowl game. You know, Colorado's at the point now where they got to win out just to be bowl eligible. Teams are like, man, we got to win just to keep my job. So lots of pressure, lots of coaches. Who do you see out there that's on the hot seat, Howie?
Yeah, it's a business out there, and I think there's some coaches who are going to learn quickly that it's a business, and that that winning is the key to a successful business. So I'm going to start in the ACC. I think Dabo is, I think it's getting loud over there in Clemson. He's got to get this transfer portal and this NIL stuff figured out, because they're slowly getting behind the eight ball on that type of stuff. And for a program that's been so historically good here recently, to see how college football has shaped and changed here in the last couple of years, just to see Clemson kind of get left back in the olden days, is not good for the Clemson alumni, the boosters, who feel like they're probably putting good money into the program and it's just not being well spent. So I think Dabo's got to get it figured out.
Wow, dude, that's an interesting one. There's a lot of people the past few years that have kind of been heaping it on Clemson. Hey, the dynasty's over. And you're right. You know, Dabo's taking a very strong stance, probably the strongest in the country, of like not willing to adapt to this new era of college football.
Right.
But man, they started the year really bad. But I do think they've had some quality wins as of late, you know, beating that Notre Dame team. They've got North Carolina this weekend. But I like your call more, probably a little more longer. Like, hey, not worried about this year, anything soon, but maybe look out for the next couple of years. If Dabo doesn't adapt, they might move on.
Yeah. Yep. So, and I'm going to move to the Big 12 now. I think West Virginia, Neil Brown at West Virginia, I just think they've played in some games that they should have won, and they're not winning those games. And they had a run there in the 2000s where they were elite. And I think they're starting to hit a ceiling with Neil Brown.
Wow.
And they're gonna have to look elsewhere. I think there's already been some college coaches shuffle a little bit, and I think there's enough good ones out there to take over this West Virginia program. You know, losing to Houston, losing to Oklahoma State. The Penn State loss looks worse now, right? Mm. With the way that Penn State can't beat Ohio State or Michigan. So those are the type of games that you got to at least compete better in. And I felt like they got handled by Penn State.
Yeah. And okay, speaking of Penn State, Howie, I don't want to mess you up here. I don't want to jump conferences. But any thoughts on James Franklin?
Yeah, he was on my list.
Really?
That wow. That seat is very hot.
Wow.
Because I think they've hit a ceiling. I really do. I think he's taking them as high as they're going to go. They're never going to beat Ohio State or Michigan. I just saw an Instagram post today that was like, he's like 5-14 since getting to Happy Valley. He's never beat like,
against
and I'm
those
sure
teams.
He's beaten Michigan like four times. You wow. know what I mean?
Yeah, dude.
And, so
you know what James Franklin makes me think of, and I was thinking this, but this is still not even a good comparison because Mark. So I think of Mark Richt when he was at Georgia, because
yeah.
But Mark Richt actually won the SEC a couple times, but I think of like. James Franklin, like you said, that ceiling, that's a great point, Howie, is like, man, he's like a 9 or a 10-win guy, but he can't win the big ones. And he hasn't been able to win the Big Ten. And he hasn't been able to get them into the playoff. And, man, you know what happened? Georgia was like, all right, we're moving on from Mark Richt. I kind of thought at the time, dude, you don't realize how good you have it. You could get worse. Like, man, you're winning 9 or 10 games a year. You're compete for the SEC championship. And they're like, no, dude, we want to win a national championship. They get Kirby. Couple years, man,
right.
Georgia's the team. Penn State kind of has that ability, right? They're a huge brand. They got huge history, huge tradition. If they bring in the right guy, they might be able to take that next step. I don't know. That's Howie, that's a good one, man. James Franklin.
Imagine if you get a wideout game for an Ohio State game. Like you get the wideout Penn State and you have a coach that can actually like compete with the Ryan Day.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Oh, that's electric.
I mean, I've watched I've actually been at IU watching IU Penn State, and I've watched James Franklin make like some of the worst coaching decisions ever and almost
Wow.
lose to like IU. And that was like
Oof.
not in the COVID year when they had Penix. They're 21-point favorites this week against Rutgers at home after the Michigan game. I like Rutgers to cover this week.
Dude, yes, great call. Penn State's offense can't move the ball. Shout out to their
No.
defense, Manny Diaz. They're great. The offense can't move the ball. Howie, anybody else on that list? Dude, I'm sorry I jumped the gun on you there with James
Yo,
Franklin.
you're good. You're good. I got a lot on James. He's been on it for a while. So heading to the Pac-12, I got two coaches in the Pac-12 that I think, maybe not this year, but certainly when they move to the Big Ten, could get exposed. And that's Chip Kelly and Lincoln Riley. I think just two underwhelming programs right now. I mean, UCLA, back-to-back losses, Arizona State, and going to the Big Ten next year, like, got to be heading in a better direction to compete
Yeah.
with some of the teams in the Big Ten. I think Michigan State, with the like all the controversy, they're gonna find the right guy, and they're gonna try to get back up to being, in that Penn State tier of the Big Ten. And as a team like UCLA, you have the ability to like be that team,
Yeah.
right? To be on that Michigan State tier, but I just don't think they're there right now. I think they're more like Wisconsin or Iowa, kind of that third
Okay.
tier or the top tier of the West, so to speak. And I think we might see some coaching changes in those Pac-12 teams that are coming into the Big Ten, depending on how they match up with the new conference. And then Lincoln Riley, I just think, obviously, like, the Big Ten's a defensive league, right?
Yes, elite
Never, he's
defense.
never been able to figure that out really in his
Never.
career.
What's the deal?
I don't understand it.
Oh, it's puzzling. It's so puzzling. Lincoln Riley, man. The USC fans, did you hear our bit list last week? They got to be the most disappointed fans in college football. I
They
mean,
have to be.
Caleb Williams, you got to hide their offensive talent through the roof. And you knew that going into this year to make the playoff, to make a run, you got to have a defense. And their defense looks even worse. Oh,
Right.
Howie, great call. That's going to be a
Yeah,
rude
I
awakening
mean,
for them in the Big Ten.
USC's been pushed around, and they haven't responded well
Yeah.
in any situation that they've been pushed around in. And that falls on coaching. Like, how you respond is that's all coaching and culture and foundation. And to see them kind of lay down in some spots where they've faced like real adversity late in the game, that's concerning to me.
Very much so. Great call, Howie.
Yep. And Caleb Williams will not be the number one pick in the draft this year.
Oh, hot take, Howie. Come on,
Just gonna
you're
slide that
dropping
in
that
there.
on us.
Just
Let's
gonna slide
go.
that in there.
Who's it gonna be? You don't know, or is it just not gonna be Caleb
I don't know.
Williams?
We'll have to see. I think there's gonna be some trades there at the top. Just with some of the teams that are in need for a quarterback, but they might not want to take a chance on Caleb Williams, who has seemed to be like a prima donna. Here's my list of needs.
Yeah. Oof.
I just don't know if you want to take a chance on that. I don't know if I can see Drake May getting this like Will Levis thing where maybe he drops.
Wow.
I think he's very talented. I think he's more talented than Will Levis was. But I just don't know if there's this clear like, first quarterback, second quarterback, third quarterback. Like, I'd love
There's
to
a
say
lot of
Penix
talent.
is one that somebody would go, yeah, we want that on our team, but
Yeah.
how does that translate to the NFL? I don't know. You know what I mean? I
Yeah.
just don't know who would be willing to take a chance on that.
There's a lot of quarterback talent, but Howie, great call. I love the, I'm all for the hot takes, man. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I think it's a lot more off-field stuff with Caleb Williams. Just some
Right. Yeah.
immaturity, painting the
Yeah.
fingernails, F whoever, and a lot of stuff that you're just like, oh man, I don't know if the NFL team's going to want that in their culture, like you talked about. So interesting, man. It'll
Right.
be interesting to see which NFL team lines up there. If it's like a toxic franchise, they might just be like, yeah, we'll take them. If it's another one, they might be like,
Yeah.
we're moving off. So interesting.
Arizona Cardinals, maybe. Maybe the Cardinals ship Kyler to like Atlanta because they need a
Ooh.
quarterback, and they take on Caleb Williams' experience.
Interesting. Interesting. How you got any other hot takes in you, man? Come on. I love it.
So SEC, we'll transition to SEC. I had Jimbo at the top of my list, but yeah, and obviously A&M had enough of him. But he was dead in the water there. Hey, good for him for getting paid though.
Jimbo, businessman on his way out. Businessman.
That was the same thing with Gus Malzahn there at Auburn when they asked him to leave. It was he got paid.
Yes,
paid
crazy.
But I was watching LSU Florida this week, and I think I don't know about Billy Napier.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe like I said, maybe another year or two. But you got to start beating some of these borderline teams like LSU. Or like Ole Miss, or you got to start really controlling those teams. And they lost to Arkansas as well.
Yeah.
Not good. They got a huge test this week with Missouri, and then FSU to finish it. So
yes, dude, UF is the most puzzling team to me in the country, Howie. Like they have some really good wins and some really bad losses, and it's just like which team's going to show up? Like honestly. I wouldn't be surprised if they lose this week to Missouri and then they come back and beat FSU to like knock them out of the playoffs. Like I honestly wouldn't be shocked because it's like, dude, you lose to Arkansas at home, who Arkansas is 3-7. And then, you know, they've lost to a Utah team. And they, that first week when they played at Utah, they lost and Graham Mertz looked awful. I was like, oh my goodness, Billy Napier might not make it through this year. And then they win some big games and you're like, oh my goodness, which Florida team are we going to get? So Howie, great call. Quick recap for us. You had give us the rundown if your coach is on the hot seat.
Yeah, so I had Dabo Sweeney at Clemson, Neil Brown at West Virginia, Chip Kelly, Lincoln Riley in the Pac-12. We got Billy Napier in the SEC, and then poor Jimbo, who's probably playing golf right now. And we have James Franklin in the Big Ten. I also got another one in the Big Ten. PJ Fleck. I think there's a hole in the boat.
Wow. Hole in the boat. Storyline.
I think there's a hole in the boat.
Uh-oh.
His ceiling in the Big Ten is not high. I just think, and especially at a place like Minnesota, they'll never – I mean, if they can compete in the West the way it is now – how will they ever, if that makes sense. Just underwhelming offenses. I mean, a good enough defense to hold up with Big Ten West teams that love to punt. but I mean, come on, PJ, like,
yeah,
your team at Western Michigan was just so exciting and like, will fly around, make plays like,
yep.
So vertical, like the DeBoer's offense, like it was so vertical, and then we finish it off with a run, and you know, have that culture of like being pumped and excited, and it was just energetic sideline in Western Michigan. We just not seen that in Minnesota.
Yeah,
maybe because it's 20 below zero, but like, come on, PJ, like the tie and the quarter zip still look good in the sweater, but.
Tough.
And I love the motto. I love like what he tries to build, but it's just not working in the Big Ten. It's not working to get them results.
Yeah. And there's some guys like that where you're like, did that ever have a chance? Like the place of Minnesota, is that ceiling high enough? Like you said, it's just interesting, you know, because I read an article actually in prepping for this. I knew you were going this route, not with PJ Fleck or Minnesota, but I knew you were going hot seat. So I was like, man, let's look up some history here the last few years. Which kind of teams are stuck in that like mediocrity stage? Or like you said, they just can't get through the ceiling. And Minnesota did stand out to me of like, man, they've had a very solid football team. PJ Fleck's been there, I think, 6 or 7 years now plus, and they haven't been able to win the Big Ten West, which has probably been the most winnable division of a conference out there. You know, like it's just up for grabs every year. It's kind of like, man, if you could take down Iowa, if you can just handle your business, and they haven't been able to, which I was surprised about. Like, dude, Purdue has won, Northwestern, like and Minnesota hasn't been able to. So, Howie, great call.
Right.
Hey, any final thoughts for your team, IU? What's the state of the Hoosiers? Come on.
Yeah. Before I get there, I want to just little quick note of some of the coldest seats in the country. Ooh. I just want to run through this list real quick.
Okay.
In ACC, Jeff Brohm at Louisville is doing a great job.
Yes.
In his first year, and I think I have a source close to Purdue and saying a lot of Purdue studs are reaching out to Brohm. Looking to transfer. He took a lot with him already, and I think he's going to take more.
Wow. Howie, real quick, could they beat Florida State in the AC championship?
I believe they could, which is crazy because IU had a chance to beat Louisville.
Yes.
Like week two or three or whatever it was. They were down. IU was down 21-0 at halftime and lost 21-14. They shut them out in the second half.
Ooh. Jeff Brohm just beating up on all those Indiana teams, man. You know, it's like he never left Purdue.
Tired of
Notre Dame, beating IU. Crazy. Sorry, I messed you up.
No, you're good. In the Big 12, Steve Sarkisian is just a stud at Texas. I think they're just – they got all the right stuff to go in the SEC and compete. I'm pumped. I'm pumped to see what that looks like.
Wow.
Here in the next couple of years.
Sark.
I love Texas right now. Pac-12, my boy, Kalen DeBoer, is just a stud. Dude.
Yep, he's locked in. Extend him now.
Yeah, extend him now. We talked about Washington and their case for being in the top four is really strong and continues to get stronger with each week they play. And then in the SEC, Kirby Smart and Nick Saban are just two staples that shouldn't go anywhere anytime soon.
Yep.
You know what you're going to get every week with them. And how could you get rid of them? Right. How could that seat be any colder for them? And then the Big Ten, Ryan Day is probably the safest job right now.
Yeah, I think so.
I was going to say Harbaugh at Michigan, but which is all the stuff going on.
Ooh.
That seat has gotten extremely hot. But Ryan Day probably has the coolest seat in the Big Ten right now, just the way his team consistently shows up. And they're winning a little differently than they did with CJ Stroud, right?
Yeah.
CJ Stroud had the years and experiences with the arm talent to make those throws. McCord's getting there week by week. He's getting there, but they've really grinded out some wins and shown their identity and their defense. And they've gritted out some games, which has been really impressive to see.
Oh yeah.
As much as I hate to say that as an IU fan.
I agree with you, man.
Yeah.
I think the script has flipped on Ryan Day throughout this year. And I think this whole Michigan
thing
just strengthens Ryan Day's case. And honestly, you know how well CJ Stroud is playing in the NFL right now? Like, dude's a lock for rookie of the year. He's got to be in the MVP conversation. And I think if you look at that, to me, that's got to be some of the biggest evidence that Michigan was cheating, because there's no way they were shutting that dude down. And look at the semifinal last year. He put up, I think, 45 on Georgia. Like, dude was lighting up Georgia.
Absolutely.
Georgia had that late comeback. And I'm like, bro, the only team that CJ Stroud couldn't beat was Michigan. And then all this comes out, and I'm like, it adds up. It adds up, in my opinion. Like, it makes sense. They were stealing signs. They knew what was coming because that dude is elite. And I think if he didn't lose to Michigan, he might have been picked number one over Bryce. I don't know, man. Crazy stuff.
Yeah. Yep, Michigan definitely cheating. And we'll see what the NCAA does for that.
True.
It'll be interesting to see how all that concludes.
Absolutely.
But, all right, we'll switch gears to...
What do you do with IU, man? What do we do?
We'll switch gears to hopefully the hottest seat in the Big Ten is Tom Allen. Look, I love Tom Allen as a coach. I think he's a great coach. I think he's a great defensive mind. He's been horrible at running a program. It's difficult at a place like IU, obviously, to run a football program, right? Basketball school, all the boosters basically care about just basketball. But I've been in the stadium. I was in the stadium for the Rutgers game, and it was a Like, it was a good atmosphere to start. I mean, it was homecoming, which helps. But there are a lot of alumni and a lot of fans in there that were hoping to do well. And it flips so quick with Tom Allen's teams. It flips so quick. It's like two possessions and then like you're done. You're done. Like they had Penn State on the ropes at Penn State. And it was Penn State took the top off, and then it was a strip sack, fumble, safety, and that was it. That was the game.
Oh.
Like, it's almost impressive how quickly they lose it. In the Rutgers game, it was a muff punt by Jalen Lucas, one of your studs, one of your like freaking just. I need this guy to show up every time. And he muffs a punt, and Rutgers scores, and they just run away with the game from there. Basically, I don't see a coach that can recruit players to come there, build a good enough culture to withstand not having the best talent, and then I don't know the. The proof's in the pudding, and the juju's like wearing off with IU right now.
Yeah,
the whole LEO is wearing off. The our buddy Joe Holderman, he calls him Pom Pom Tom, best cheerleader in the Big Ten is what Joe says.
Shout out to Joe.
Shout out to Joe.
Is that your producers?
he talked to somebody close to Louisville that said their Purdue people were reaching out, but
got you.
Just too many big mistakes in a college football program. So IU football is in a very bad spot, and I don't know. The thing is, I don't know where you go to get better.
Right.
I just don't know who's next. I don't know who you reach out to make it better. I really don't.
Yeah,
I don't know who's next, but I know that long-term solution is not Tom Allen.
That's tough. Tough place to be as an IU fan. Hopefully brighter days are ahead, Howie. It's exciting times, at least for the landscape of college football, but I know I'm sure it's got to be hard to be optimistic as an IU fan right now. Oh,
yeah, it's fun when you beat Wisconsin, and then it's sucks when you lose to Illinois the next week.
That's a roller coaster, man. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah, that's one of those math isn't mathing type of things.
Yes. Madness. Well, Howie, pleasure having you on, man. Seriously, thanks for making time for it. The LCP loves you. We got to have you back at least next year. Maybe later on in the year when we have some playoff predictions or something, we'll get you back on and see if Washington can make a run. The Huskies are hot, man. But Howie, pleasure having you on, man. And go Hoosiers. Hopefully brighter days are ahead for you. But thanks for the takes, man. Love it.
Yes, sir, Leonard. Thanks for having me, and God bless. Go Hoosiers.
All right, people. Hope you enjoyed that segment with Howie. Howie is the man. Hard to love a guy more than Howie. Just an all-out sports fan. Obviously, tough days for IU, but he's a loyal Hoosier, and he's sticking with his team. And he doesn't know. The future seems uncertain, but obviously he is off of the Tom Allen wagon. But Howie, just an avid sports fan and a great friend of mine from TU. Always supported all the TU sports. Big time having Howie on the show. Hope y'all enjoyed that. All right, we got a couple individual shout-outs to give out here on the pod. There has just been some phenomenal individual play as of late. And the first one I want to give is Cody Schrader of Missouri. First player in SEC history with 100-plus receiving yards and 200-plus rushing yards in a single game. Shout out Cody Schrader, and boy, oh boy, was I right on that one. Johnny had the Vols. I stuck with the Missouri Tigers, and boy, oh boy, was that a blowout. Missouri, Elijah Drinkowitz. They are having themselves a year. Another individual shout out, Jaden Daniels. Unbelievable performance last weekend. Week after week, this guy is proving that in my book, if I had a vote for the Heisman, Jaden Daniels is my vote. And we'll talk more about later some other contenders for the Heisman, but Jaden Daniels is one of one in college football right now. That dude is absolutely electric. He doesn't just run to pick up first downs. He doesn't just scramble to give himself more time in the pocket. Dude makes like long runs consistently. 20, 30, 40, 60-yard runs. The guy is slithery, and he is an absolute playmaker. And to me, if I could pick one player to watch in college football that's the most exciting player right now, I'm not picking Caleb Williams. I'm not picking Bo Nix. I'm not picking Michael Penix Jr. I'm not even picking Jordan Travis, even though all of those dudes are electric. Those are not knocks on those guys. I just think Jaden Daniels, oh boy, he just reminds me of Johnny Manziel back there. He is so fun to watch, and I hope that we appreciate Jaden Daniels. We've gotten to see him in a lot of primetime games this year, some wins, some losses, but boy, oh boy, is he a special talent, and that LSU defense has let him down because that is a special offense this year. Their top two receivers remind me of Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase when they were neighbors. That dude's legit. They've got a lot of talent, and that defense has just been bad. So Brian Kelly fixed the defense, kind of similar to what USC has got going on this year. An incredibly talented quarterback, a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the ball, but a defense that just cannot hang. So Jaden Daniels, shout out to you. You're my Heisman to this point in the year. And my goodness, Jalen Milroe, first player in Alabama history with three passing touchdowns and three rushing touchdowns in the same game. Had an unbelievable performance against LSU. Really the first time we've seen Alabama use him well and him play his game. He's not a pocket passer. He's not Bryce Young. He's not Tua Tagovailoa. He's not Mac Jones. No, but you know what he is like, man? He is like a Cam Newton bulldozer. When he runs the ball, he doesn't run out of bounds. He doesn't avoid contact. He runs guys over. And when he throws the ball, he has got a serious cannon. Nice to see Tommy Rees dialing up plays that are utilizing the strengths of Jalen Milroe. Jalen Milroe, shout out. And in my opinion, you might just say, oh, Josh, you're a biased Alabama fan. Okay. It's not about how you start the year. It's about how you finish. And I know you got to have a complete year to win the Heisman. But boy, oh boy, Jalen Milroe's got to be on the cusp of the Heisman conversation. I'd have him in there. Jalen Milroe, shout out. He has just been tearing it up lately. And finally, I want to give a shout out to the Ole Miss wide receiver Dayton Wade. Up there for catch of the year nominee. Oh my goodness. Did you see that catch? Reminded me of Keon Coleman from FSU's catch earlier this year. To me, in my book, those two catches have got to be up there for catch of the year nominee. So shout out Dayton Wade. All right, moving away from individual shout outs to now a team shout outs and some recaps from last week. Obviously, two of the huge games last week were Michigan, Penn State, and Ole Miss, Georgia. And here's my opinion, people. I said it earlier. Georgia asserted themselves as the dominant and unanimous number one team in the country. They host the NCAA's longest standing win streak right now, and they are poised and primed to try to make a repeat here and go for 3 years in a row as college football national champions. I just think that if you're the committee and you don't put Georgia number one, it just shows you that they want some views for that Ohio State-Michigan game, because that domination just proved we haven't seen a team do that this year against another top 10 opponent. That was an absolute boat race. And don't get me wrong, that is a very good Ole Miss team. I am not bashing Ole Miss. As a matter of fact, you might call me crazy. I think that that Ole Miss team would beat that Penn State team at home or on the road. And again, I'm not knocking Penn State either, because Penn State has an elite defense. Elite defense. Manny Diaz. Very, very good team. But Penn State has no offense. And I don't think that that Georgia-Ole Miss game was a lack of Ole Miss's defense. I think that it was a dominance of Georgia's offense. And them just reminding the country, we are number one. We are the big dogs. And the title runs through Athens. So, whew, with that, the SEC championship matchup is set. And that's going to be a big one. That game may have the biggest playoff implications of any. Because could you imagine if Alabama goes in there and beats Georgia, and then Georgia, as two-time defending champs, would have an undefeated regular season record but a loss to Alabama in the SEC championship game? Now, there's still other games to be played. I am not fast-forwarding, okay? Alabama still got to play the Iron Bowl rivalry weekend at Auburn. You never know what can happen to Jordan Hare. Georgia still has Tennessee this weekend. So, I mean, there are still a lot of college football games to be played. But this weekend was just the cusp of chaos, but it didn't quite happen. Florida State hangs on to beat Miami. They looked shaky, but I'm still going to say what I've been saying all year. Does anybody want to play against Jordan Travis? That guy is good. Washington State holds on and beats Utah, but I'm going to say what I've been saying all year. Utah is a very good football team. They have been the standard of consistency and excellence in the pack for the last several years. So, man, I know those games were close, but you got to look at this and go rivalry games, tough teams, good opponents. Again, like we talked about last week, if Miami didn't lose that game against Georgia Tech, that would probably be a team ranked in the top 25. Now, their quarterback play is nowhere near what it needs to be. So I would say that FSU skating by this weekend was the least impressive win. But again, you just never know what's going to happen in rivalry games. But it was fun to see almost every top team in the country tested. The only game that I would say wasn't a test was Ohio State against Michigan State. But Ohio State has already played a lot of tough competition this year and shown that they can win big games. All right, let's talk rankings. And this is a fun episode because this is going to be released before the college football playoff rankings are announced. So this is fun. We're getting this one in a little earlier in the week. Now, again, we're going to have more content with the YouTube channel starting and everything. And so, again, would love for y'all to go to the YouTube channel to sub there and to catch some of our clips. And, again, just share this with the college football fans, someone who would love it. Send us your takes. And we're going to continue to just try to provide great, unbiased, fun, family-friendly, no language, no, you know, bad things that you can't have kids listening to. So, man, if you're a dad and you got your kids in the car and you like listening to college football, this is a safe show for you. So thanks again, fans. Appreciate y'all for tuning in. But here's one thing I mentioned. Reddit College Football came out with an awesome post. They talked about the potential for the very first year of the college football playoff, those same four teams, to be repeated in this year's edition of the college football playoff. Could you imagine? That would be insane. You know what that would feature? It'd be Ohio State, Oregon, Alabama, and Florida State. And all four of those teams are 1 or 0 loss teams right now and have a legitimate chance for the playoff. Crazy. Now, I've got some beef right now with the AP poll. And I know that the AP poll doesn't matter as much as the CFP, and the CFP is going to put out their rankings tonight. But before we get to that, I want to pre-propose what I think the playoff rankings should be right now. So let's look at the AP poll. Here's what the AP poll has got right now. They've got Georgia 1, Michigan 2, Ohio State 3, Florida State 4, Washington 5, Oregon 6, Texas 7, Alabama 8, and Louisville 9. And I'm going to stop there because Louisville would be our last one-loss team in right there. And then they go with the two-loss teams after that. And they've got Oregon State, Missouri, Penn State, and Ole Miss. And I just think there's so much wrong with these rankings. And again, I got to remind myself, Reese Davis, you know, deep breath. It doesn't matter. It's okay. There's still a lot of time left. But the rankings do matter right now because they have implications for later. And the last ranking is the most important one. But you can't just pull a 180 on the last ranking. You got to have consistency every single week. And so I know that Greg McElroy has brought this up. And I want to point out Pat McAfee's rankings as well because I love Pat McAfee, man. He's just happy to be there on the show. He brings great, fun energy to College Game Day. He has good stuff on his own show. But I love it because he's not up there considering all the things for his team or his conference or whatever. He was a West Virginia guy. So he's got an unbiased perspective. And here's what Pat McAfee's got right now, his top six. He's got 1, Georgia, 2, Ohio State, 3, Michigan, 4, Florida State, 5, Washington, and 6, Alabama. And he stopped there at the top six. And I think that this is really important to highlight because McElroy and McAfee, ooh, got the M's going, Mac and Mac, I would agree with their rankings here. I think that Alabama has shown to be the best one-loss team in the country. Now, of course, you can't argue that Texas should be over them because of the head-to-head. And I can't disagree with you there. But I do think that Texas is a little bit of that team that shows up for the big games, but they don't show up every week. And I want to see some maturity in Steve Sarkisian's coaching because they tend to mess around with some of these teams that they shouldn't mess around with. TCU ends up coming back in that game. And let me get the final score for you on that game from last week of TCU Texas. And again, shout out to Johnny. Great call on last week's episode of the pod about how that would be a game that was circled before the season. And look, the final score, because Texas, they go up big at halftime. They're going into the half with a big lead. They're holding a big lead. And they mess around. And guess what? They only beat TCU by 3. TCU is 4-6 this year. They lost to 4-6 Colorado this year. At home, mind you. So that's not a good football team. And I get it. There's rivalries and whatnot. But they only won by 3. They didn't close the game. And this concerns me with Steve Sarkisian in Texas. They mess around with some teams that they should blow out. They messed around with Wyoming earlier this year. They lost that neutral site game to Oklahoma, and Oklahoma has now lost some games. So I'm just concerned with Texas. They haven't shown me that domination. Now, again, the argument comes back to they beat Alabama head-to-head. But I do think that both of those teams, Alabama and Texas, whoever you put at 6 or 7, should be ahead of Oregon. And I know that Oregon has the eye test, but you can't convince me that the eye test has shown you more than what Alabama and Texas have shown you on the football field and their resume. And here's an interesting thing. Going into this week, before this week, we had 3 teams in the country with top 25 ranked wins. Texas and Alabama. Yep, no surprises there. You know who the 3rd team was? Arizona. The Arizona Wildcats. And they kind of snuck into the top 25 last week, I said. I was wrong. They're a 3-loss team, but they're a good 3-loss team. They've got 3 top 25 wins already this year. Now, there's 2 more teams, and I may be missing some, so if I miss any, send me your team because you're paying more attention to your team than I am. But I tried to rack my brain and do some research and find out if there were any other teams after this week's games that had top 25 wins now. And I found 2 of them, and that's Missouri and Georgia. With Georgia's win over Ole Miss and with Missouri's win over Tennessee, they both now have 3 top 25 wins. So that gives us only 5 teams in the country that have 3 top 25 wins. And Arizona is one of them. So let's give some respect to Arizona out there in the pack. But to me, like we talked about last week, Oregon's resume just isn't there. And if you just want to set the precedent that Oregon is that 6th team because of the eye test, then, I mean, that's just not going to be good. Because there's going to be a lot of teams who are disappointed at the end of the year when I believe other teams will jump them, potentially. So it's really interesting. It's very, very interesting. Those numbers matter. And I've got some beef with the AP poll for multiple reasons. And one of those is that they've got Penn State at 12 over Ole Miss. Give me a break. I know that Penn State's only 2 losses are to Ohio State and Michigan, but Penn State has shown me nothing. And here's a crazy hot take for you. I actually think that the top half of the SEC would all beat Penn State this year. And I know they've got a tough home environment, so maybe I'm off on that if they all have to play at Penn State. But you can't tell me that you think Missouri, Ole Miss, LSU, Alabama, and Georgia would boat race Penn State. That's just what I think. And so that point, who cares as much about Penn State being over Ole Miss? But that point goes to this thought for me. That Georgia win over Ole Miss was way more impressive than Michigan's win over Penn State. People are saying that Michigan dominated Penn State in that game. Give me a break. I got to push back on that narrative. This was a one-score game the whole way, and it should have been a final one-score game. If you watch this game, you would realize that Penn State, for some reason, decided to go for 2 at the end of the first half. I don't know why. Kick a field goal and get points. And because they didn't get it, they started to go for 2 every time they scored, and they didn't convert on any of their 2-point conversions. If they would have just kicked field goals, this final score would have been a 1-score game. And not to mention, down 1 score, they went for it on 4th down in their own territory, on like their own 25 late in the game. And then the very next play, Michigan scored on 1 play, 1 run. So that put them up by 2 scores. Then Penn State scored again, and it should have been a final that was just 1 loss, 1 score in that loss for Penn State. So I didn't think that Michigan win was very impressive. I'm not going to lie. I didn't see a lot of team speed out there. And I don't know what the conditions, how much the conditions played into that and whatnot. I know it was maybe a little wet. It was a little cold. I didn't see a lot of team speed on the offensive side of the ball for Michigan. On the defensive side, I did. I saw some serious defensive linemen running down running backs for Penn State. But on the offensive side, I just don't see it. And man, shout out to Blake Corum. Guy played hard-nosed. Guy was bloody at the end of the game. So I am not knocking Blake Corum. But I am just saying that they lack, in my opinion, elite receivers and elite speed on the outside to take the top off of a football team. And that matters inside this top four, inside this top 10. Because I would say that pretty much every other team inside the top 10 does have elite skill positions, does have elite speed, does have elite receivers on the offensive side of the ball. So yeah, I know that Michigan's defense is there, but I am just questioning their offense. And again, this is their only tough opponent that they've had to this point. So we shall see. But I told you that I'd give you my top six here, and my top six would go like this. Georgia number one, no doubt. And I believe that we will see that tonight. And if not, then just know that there's other motives at play. Number two, Ohio State. Number three, Florida State. Number four, Washington. Number five, Michigan. Number six, Alabama. And then I would have Texas and Oregon to follow. So, again, I know y'all are going to say, man, biased Alabama fan. That's just what I'm seeing. Tell me what team's saying right now after seeing Jalen Milroe's performance the last 2 weeks. Yeah, we love to play Bama. And as a matter of fact, for some reason, the ESPN FBI has Alabama having a higher percentage to go into the playoff than Georgia. That's crazy. That's nonsense. Any team having a higher percentage to make the playoff than Georgia is just ridiculous. I'd call it blasphemy to this point. So that's my take. That's my rankings. There you go. All right, we are going to close this episode with some Heisman talk, and there is no one else to talk about besides Jaden Daniels. In my opinion, this is a one-player race. We're going to cover some other players. We're going to give some other shout-outs. But Jaden Daniels threw for 372 yards last week and ran for 234 yards. Yes, ran for 234 yards. Yo, just for perspective, y'all, here's what I got to show you. There was only 134 passing yards total from Drew Aller and J.J. McCarthy last week in that Penn State-Michigan game. Now, I know, I am not just trying to cherry-pick numbers here because obviously Michigan didn't throw the ball in the second half. Was just a sign of, hey, we're just going to run and we're just going to dominate. And they played to win that game. And man, shout out. Give them credit for that. They won and they dominated and they didn't even throw a single pass in the second half. So that just shows strength more than it does weakness, in my opinion. So you might say, oh, you're cherry picking these stats. But what I'm trying to tell you is that two quarterbacks in a huge top 10 matchup didn't even throw for as much yards combined as Jaden Daniels ran. And I know that that Florida team, as I've been saying all year, is just the most questionable team out there. I mean, who in the world is this Florida team? They win games they shouldn't win, and they lose games they shouldn't lose, and it just makes no sense to me. Now, mark a date on your calendar. 2 weeks from now, Florida will host Florida State in the Swamp for a huge rivalry game to end the regular season, and they could be Florida State spoilers. I think if they win that game, there'd have to be a lot of other chaos for Florida State to make the top four. They'd also have to beat Louisville in the ACC championship. So interesting stuff. Now, I'm getting sidetracked here, but that Florida team is just, you just never know what you're going to get. And obviously they don't have much of a defense. They allowed 39 to Arkansas the week before. They obviously allowed a ton to LSU this past weekend. So I am not trying to say that, oh man, Jaden Daniels played some superior defense. I don't care who you play against, a Power 5 opponent, any of them, to throw for 372 and to run for 234 is ridiculous. That's bonkers. Only player in FBS history to ever do that. So Jaden Daniels is my favorite, obviously, to this point. Of course, Michael Penix. He has been so good all year on the West Coast. He has been lighting it up. Didn't even slow down this past weekend. They had a few hiccups against some teams that it was close, but they haven't lost. They've got the second longest winning streak in college football right now as a team, Washington, and Penix has been the reason why. Him and DeBoer, man, they're just lighting it up. As you heard Howie and I talk about, obviously IU fans are missing that OC and quarterback combo, and now that's a head coach quarterback combo, and Michael Penix has just been ridiculous. He's been lighting it up as well. So obviously those are two of the people that have got to be the front runners in this race. Now I want to point out that Fox Sports, they put out a post here, and let me show you this. Now, College Football on Fox puts out this list, and I don't disagree with any of these names being on there or being on the watch, but they didn't include Jaden Daniels. So, I mean, come on. But here's who they do have. They've got Michael Penix Jr., of course, who I mentioned, Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, Jordan Travis, Carson Beck, Marvin Harrison Jr., and then wait for it. Come on, Jalen Milroe. Jalen Milroe has entered into the Heisman conversation. I mean, holy smokes. The past 2 weeks, it's been him and Jaden Daniels that have just been lighting it up and putting on a show. Now, I want to point out some of these numbers because Bo Nix and Jordan Travis, their touchdown to interception ratios are ridiculous. For Bo Nix, it's 30 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, and Jordan Travis, it's 26 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. Now, I know those are total touchdowns. They're not just throwing touchdowns, so that's not a direct correlation on the stat, you know, throwing touchdowns to interception ratio, but just the amount of times that these dudes are finding the end zone with their arms and legs, I mean, this has got to be one of the most talented quarterback classes, and a lot of them are draft eligible as well. So we'll see how it comes down here to the wire. But I do think Marvin Harrison Jr. should be in serious consideration for this award as well. He's approaching 1,000 yards receiving, and he's got 10 total touchdowns. And this past weekend against Michigan State, he just showed that he is unguardable. And he stands alone in the top of this incredibly talented receiver class. I've mentioned a lot of them. Malik Nabers. I mean, there's a lot of talented wide receivers out there. Keon Coleman, Johnny Wilson at FSU. So there's a lot of talent out there. Washington's receivers are good. Luther Burden at Missouri. So there's a lot of wide receiver talent out there. But Ohio State has shown that Marvin Harrison Jr., as my friend Alex Sanders quoted a couple episodes ago from Joel Klatt, is their outpitch. And to me, that's what gives them the advantage. Prequel, a little preview here to them in the matchup against Michigan. So I'm not going to get into that right now. But I do find it interesting that Carson Beck hasn't been in a lot of these Heisman conversations while he is leading an incredible season in his first year, and Georgia's dominating. So there you go. There's some people that should be in consideration for the Heisman. So let's wrap it up, people. Here goes another great episode of the LCFB. I hope y'all enjoyed it. I want to give a big shout out on the way out. We haven't had the Stumpy, the uniform man, on in a few weeks. We'll try to get him back next week. Or we may just have a YouTube special with him on breaking down some of his best uniforms. But my goodness, did you see those space unis from UCF and UCF's absolute obliteration of Oklahoma State? Wow. Now, I wish I would have said it on the pod last week, but I did have some text out to some people saying my upset pick from this week would be UCF at home over Oklahoma State. And boy, oh boy, did they do it. They absolutely dominated. I believe the final there was 45-3, and UCF was rocking those space unis. John Reese Plumlee, who I think this is only his second year there, maybe his third year there, broke UCF's all-time quarterback rushing record. So, I mean, goodness gracious, those space unis were sick. Big shout-out to them. And, whoof, some chaos. I know I mentioned this Heather Dinich article earlier. Goodness gracious, we are poised for some crazy chaos that could happen, okay? Heather Dinich laid out a couple of these, and I'm going to link the article for y'all, but she talked about how there could be two Pac-12 teams in there if Washington and Oregon both win out, and then Oregon wins that rematch. She talked about how there could be two SEC teams in there. We could see Alabama and Georgia both slide in there. There's just some room for some crazy chaos. There could be no SEC in there this year. We could see Texas as the Big 12 winner in over Alabama because of their head-to-head win against them earlier this year. So there is just room for chaos. Let's enjoy this weekend and next weekend and conference championship weekend, and let's see who ends up in the playoff. Enjoy it, people, and here's a couple games to look for on this Saturday slate. All right, this weekend, a lot of big ones. Okay, we've got Washington, number 5 Washington, traveling to Corvallis to play at 12 Oregon State. That's a huge one. Obviously, the fans at Oregon State and Corvallis think they got ripped off, think they should have hosted game day, but that's going to be a huge one. Can Oregon State play spoilers to Washington? Whew, I don't know. I've been down on Oregon State. I've overlooked them all year, and now they're sitting at 8-2 with a chance to take down undefeated Washington at home. That's absolutely huge. I got to highlight this one just because, like, Florida, who knows what they're going to do? They travel to play number 14, Missouri, and I don't know. I mean, that's a dangerous Florida team because, again, they win the games they shouldn't win. They lose the games they shouldn't lose. Texas travels to play at Iowa State. Trap game there, 8 o'clock start time, and Iowa State, tough to beat them at their place. I know that Iowa is known for having the huge home field advantage. Iowa State, too, tough to travel there. Texas, again, has kind of been sleepy against some teams that they should beat. We got a big rivalry this weekend in the state of Kansas as well. Number 25, Kansas State, traveling to play at 16, Kansas. Both teams sitting at 7-3. That's a toss-up. Who knows what is going to happen there? And then another one that just might not be on your radar. I mentioned it earlier with Howie's take on Dabo Swinney. We got number 24, North Carolina, traveling to play at Clemson. That's an 8-2 North Carolina team traveling to play a 6-4 Clemson team that was 4-4 2 weeks ago and has now won two straight at home against Notre Dame and Georgia Tech. So their third straight week at home, and you know they're looking to keep that streak going and end up 7-4 after this week. Don't sleep on Georgia going to play in Knoxville at Tennessee. I know Tennessee had a really bad showing. They were on the road. Tennessee at home in Neyland, going to be electric. We'll see. I think Georgia will run away with it, of course, but you just never know. Then we've got Utah at Arizona. Another 7-3 matchup here. Both teams are 7-3. I told you how much I love Utah. They've been the standard of consistency in the pack. But I also give a huge shout out to Arizona, and they're looking for their fourth top 25 win of the season. So that's a big one. Okay, people, here's one that's just kind of slept on. I know a lot of people are talking about Michigan traveling to play at Maryland, a little bit of a trap game, no Jim Harbaugh. I don't know. Here's the trap game that I'm circling. Louisville at Miami. 9-1 Louisville at 6-4 Miami. Louisville heads into the game. In the AP poll, ranked 9th, is the lowest ranked one-loss team in the country. You heard Chris Lane's take on Louisville. They could sneak up on FSU. They've had a great year. You talked about Howie and how they've just dominated the state of Indiana. Jeff Brohm, just like he never left Purdue, beating those Indiana teams this year, beat Notre Dame, beat Indiana. But now they got to travel to Miami. I know Miami doesn't have the greatest home environment. It's a noon start, but Miami is a sneaky 6-4 team. And they just played tight against FSU. Their quarterback play has been awful, but they're going back to Tyler Van Dyke this week. And this just might be the magical game for Tyler Van Dyke to go out with a bang in his Miami career. You just never know. I mean, all signs are saying, like, no, like, Louisville should run away with this one. But that's what makes me just go, well, maybe. I mean, Tyler Van Dyke, who knows? He just could have that magical game to go out on. So that's a lot of your big games for this week. The only other game that I would include in there as well, or two more games, would be Rutgers at Penn State. So we'll see, and that could just be a bounce-back week for Penn State, or we could see, well, Penn State has played nobody this year, and they can't beat good teams. So interesting there. And then the final one, a little bit of a storyline here. It's Wake Forest traveling to play at Notre Dame in South Bend. Of course, Sam Hartman's old team playing against him. So those are the games. Those are the matchups to look forward to this week. And people, it's going to be a great one. Let's enjoy this craziness, this madness, this ending to another wonderful college football season. We've still got a lot ahead and a lot to talk about. Again, go check out the YouTube channel, and we'd love to see y'all. Leave a review for this pod. Hope you enjoyed it. Laner is out.